listening to Bits of Me, the podcast about women's bodies, all the things we should know about them, and all the stories behind them. This week, I talked to Sive Devlin, an Irish language children's author, TV researcher and production assistant, and all-round maker and creative. Sive shares her story of having not one, but two ectopic pregnancies, having both her fallopian tubes removed, and finally having twins through IVF. But first, a quick thank you to all the lovely, wonderful Bits of Me patrons who support the making of this podcast. If you want to help keep the conversation going, you can sign up as well at patreon.com/bitsofme. I know that you said that you expected it to be difficult for you to get pregnant because you have polycystic ovarian syndrome. But then after a while, you started getting frustrated anyway, even though that was kind of expected. What was that like?
Yeah, so I got diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome, I think when I was a teenager, just because I had such irregular periods. And it was a funny one because a real Irish family, like, not really talked about. You just sort of got on with it. But eventually I was sort of a bit weirded out by it with other friends of mine who would have been more open maybe than I would have been about it. Would be sort of talking about it, and I'd be like, gosh, I can't even remember, you know, was it 3 months ago, was it 2 months, you know, and I'd kind of worry about that. So I eventually, you know, plucked up the courage to kind of get it sorted. And I remember getting scanned and everything, and an internal scan when you're a teenager is very invasive and very kind of freaky.
So I
remember they sort of very casually at that time mentioned that it can affect, because if you're trying to plan you know, to get pregnant, that it's quite tricky because you won't know your dates and you won't know your timings, and you have to watch out for this, that and the other. So I sort of always held that in the back of my mind. Not that I wasn't a typical, you know, in my earlier 20s and, you know, you're always trying to not get pregnant. I still would have taken precautions. But yeah, it sort of always sat there in the back of my mind. So I think when we first got married, not that I was necessarily trying immediately to get pregnant, but that I sort of thought it would take longer. So I was like, oh, we can, you know what people say about, oh, just practicing, you know, oh, we'll see what happens. Yeah. And normally for those people, you know, they're pregnant within a week, you know, and it's like, but not for us. So I sort of, yeah, I just sort of always held that in the back of my mind that this, for some reason, there wasn't something quite right with my system and that it might just take that little bit longer. And still at that time, I mean, there were times in my teens and early 20s where I could go 6 months without having my period, like, which was really freaky. Wow. Because then you really think you're pregnant, or you're, you know, or there's something really wrong. And then it would come and it would just be normal, like not even a really bad, like scary one. And and then it would be okay for like a month or two, and then it might be 3 months, and then it was just really always like crazy all over the place. Sometimes it was great because you could kind of go on holidays and hope for the best. Other times it was like you could never really plan, you know.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, you know, the way it's nice to know, you know, will I be able to use the hot tub? Will I not have to worry about this, that, and the other, you know? But yeah, I think it was just something I always held in the back of my head, that it was probably not going to be straightforward. But it didn't really worry me at that time, because I think when you're in your early 20s, I mean, I got married when I was 26, which by today's standards is like a child bride.
You know,
it's sort of, it feels, when I look back, it's like, Jesus, I was really young, actually, probably emotionally as well as age-wise. I know, even though my mum got married at 20, so she probably thought it was really, you know, time enough. But when I think back, so I wasn't particularly worried at that point. I just knew that I wanted kids at some stage, and that it might take a bit longer, so we could start trying or not trying, or just seeing what would happen.
And it did happen eventually. So you got pregnant in 2006, was it?
2006 was the first time we got pregnant. And there'd been nothing before that, like not a whisper. So the first time we got pregnant was 2006. And we were delighted because we were married 2 years at that stage, and it was, you know, that thing where people start asking newlyweds, they ask newlyweds the minute they're down the aisle, they're like, so when are you having the baby?
Yeah.
And we'd had friends who got married at similar time, and, you know, they were having babies, and it was starting to kind of feel like, oh yeah, well, we're married and we'll probably, you know, do the thing, you know. So we were delighted when we did get pregnant. And then it just wasn't very long that we were pregnant that things were very obviously not right.
Yeah. So what happened? You had some spotting at first.
Yeah, so I was in work and I started having spotting, not anything heavy. And of course, you get onto Google immediately and you're reading and you're trying to see what this could be. And of course, Dr. Google is like, it's the end of the world, or, you know, actually it's nothing and it's really common, you know, and everything in between.
Yeah.
So I phoned, I remember going out on my lunch break and phoning my GP, and he was saying, oh, it's probably a really casually, like, it's probably a miscarriage. Is this your first pregnancy? Yeah. Go home, see if you can get out of work and go home, put your feet up and wait and see, basically. He's like, there's nothing you can really do, just take it easy and see what happens. If you can get out of work, great. If you can't, you know, just try and take it easy.
What went through your mind then? Like, what were you thinking?
Well, it was really scary because you're sort of, I was working on Merrion Square at the time, and I just remember walking around the line of the park, around the railings, kind of pacing nearly on the phone. And then my husband was working just up the road in a gallery, and I phoned him, and he was just like, you know, he started more freaking out, but I was like, look, I'll be okay. I'll go back to work. I'll finish up the day. I'll go home and take it easy and just see what happens, I suppose. But I got back to work, and later that afternoon, I just started getting really like stabbing pains in my side, and he came and collected me and brought me. I had decided already, like, I was only pregnant, only knew that I was pregnant about 2 weeks. I'd already decided I wanted to go to the Coombe because a friend of mine had been to the Coombe and said it was really good compared to Holles Street, even though I was like 100 yards away from Holles Street. Whatever logic was in my head, I wanted to be in the Coombe for my baby. So my husband drove me up there, and they brought me in and did the internal scan because it was so early, and took bloods and all of that. And yeah, basically it was like, we can't see any pregnancy. Like, there was hormone detected, the pregnancy test was coming up positive, but like the lines on the pregnancy test were really, really faint. So it was like there wasn't enough of the hormone to make it really visible. Like, it was really, and my own home pregnancy test, I literally couldn't, it was, you could see the two lines, but barely, like they were really, really, really not there, but there at the same time. So, you know, it was still a positive, which just wasn't a very, very clear positive. And then they said, oh, we can't find the pregnancy. So I was just like, what's going on then? You know, is it, am I pregnant? Am I not pregnant? Is this some weird hormonal something? But after tests, then they did find it, and it was in the fallopian tube. The pregnancy itself was in the fallopian tube, so it was an ectopic pregnancy, and they can be extremely dangerous because if they rupture, it can be really quick and really unexpected and really hard to manage. So it was quite, I don't think they realized it was an fully diagnosed the ectopic until the following morning. And then it was kind of all bells and whistles. You're going to have surgery and we have to get it out, because I think the size it had really grown. So yeah, I just remember the hormone levels at that stage of pregnancy are supposed to double every day. But my hormone levels were only like going up tiny increments. They were going up, but not normally, if you know what I mean. So they knew, even if it was in the right place, it wouldn't have been a viable pregnancy, so because it was so. And I remember asking at the time, like, naively, because I literally didn't, I was like, could you just not take it out of there and put it into my womb? Just get it to, for me, get it to the right place and it should be grand. They were like, it doesn't really work that way, it's not viable, like it's not been developing normally. It's like a cluster of cells and it's not ever going to be a baby, like. So,
and when they realized what it was and they told you, like, okay, look, you're gonna have to have surgery, were you more sad about the loss of the pregnancy or worried about yourself and your health?
That's a good question. Both, really. I mean, I was devastated because I think once most females, anyway, if it's a planned or a wanted pregnancy, you're so delighted and you're fully invested from day one. The minute you see those lines, you're like, okay, this is happening. And especially like in the headspace we were in at the time, which was, you know, young, married, planning a family, it was a really lovely and wanted and exciting thing. So I was devastated for that. But also worried for myself because it was really painful, like really painful.
Yeah.
And I'd also never had surgery before. I'd never been to the hospital before for anything. So other than that, you know, test or whatever when I was a teenager, I'd never been for anything other than to the GP or whatever. So I'd never been in hospital for myself before that. So it was, and the prospect of surgery and stuff like that was totally alien concept to me at the time. So it was real, what's happening? Like, yeah, it was very kind of scary. And I kind of vaguely knew what an ectopic pregnancy was, but I didn't, like I said, quite naively asking the doctor, could you not just, could you not just relocate? I think about that now, like.
Well, at the same time, you think about IVF and the various different things that can be done. Yeah. I mean, it's not that far-fetched, maybe, if you don't really. Okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's maybe, hope, but yeah, you know?
There is. Yeah, well, I was trying to pursue all avenues, I suppose, to make this not be the reality, I suppose. Yeah, but it was very quickly decided that surgery was needed. And there are cases where you can save fallopian tubes, but not in this case. It had grown quite large. I think he said it was, I remember him doing a hand symbol, the doctor saying it was about this size, like, and it was like golf ball sized, yeah. I suppose, at that stage, which in a tiny, tiny microscopic fallopian tube is actually really large, and it had ruptured the tube. So the tube itself was destroyed anyway, okay. And was irreparable. So it was keyhole surgery, laparoscopy, and they removed it and the tube. So it was a full salpingectomy on the left side, which is the removal of the fallopian tube. But yeah, it was just a really weird, devastating sort of, I just remember coming out of the, I remember waking up in the surgery and being totally out of it, obviously, and trying to sit up and go, thanks very much now, thanks everyone, and trying to get up off the bed. And I remember them, you know, all pulling me, pressing me down onto the bed. But I remember being wheeled into the recovery room and a doctor holding my arm and saying, oh, we'll see you next year for your baby. We had a look while we were in there and the other fallopian tube looks perfect. You'll have no issues. Don't worry. This is going to be fine. So I was really kind of buoyed by that at the time. At the same time, it's a very conflicting time because you're totally, you know, dizzy with everything. And it happened so quickly. Like I was 2 days in the hospital, you know, and it was all over. It was like, oh, I went from pregnant and planning happy future to everything been gone and surgery and pain and recovery and all of that involves.
And then you were sent home with a miscarriage information leaflet. What was that like?
Like completely pointless, because even though it is a pregnancy loss and there were some parts, I suppose, that were relevant to the emotional side of it, it wasn't my experience. I didn't have a miscarriage. So it was medically that didn't describe what had just happened to me. So, I would hope at this stage, I mean, it is, you know, quite a long time ago now, I would hope that there is more information available to people. But I remember even at the time going on to like Roller Coaster or one of those parenting forum things, that because you sign up when you're pregnant immediately, you're like, you know, and you're so fascinated by everything. And there was nothing even there about ectopics. And I remember finding one person who had been through what I'd been through, and kind of, we had a conversation. I would love to be able to find those conversations. They're already archived somewhere. I can't even remember what actual parenting website it was back then. But I remember the two of us just sort of going, yeah, like nobody talks about this. Nobody knows about this. Like, and even on the ward I was in, there was people in for miscarriages and having DNCs and stuff like that. And they, you know, saying, what are you, you know, are you here for the same? And I'd be like, no, I had an ectopic. And everyone would just look blankly at me going, what's that? You know, like it was just felt very sort of like, I don't think it's completely uncommon, but I know it's rarer than a miscarriage would be.
Yeah.
A lot more common for women. But so, yeah, this is kind of nearly the extreme version, I suppose.
Yeah.
In a way.
So a complete show of ignorance here. What happens to your menstrual cycle when you remove a fallopian tube? Like, would you have had the same, like, would you have had only every second month a period, or does the other one kind of step up?
So apparently, if you have, this is what I was told at the time, I'd have to fact check it, I'm not a scientist. Apparently the one fallopian tube you're left with serves both ovaries. Apparently it can
wow
move and swing. Apparently seems when you look at the diagram of a womb and the whole
yeah
setup, it seems impossible, but apparently it can. And yeah, but at the same time, yeah, it didn't affect hormonally. It doesn't seem to affect anything. It's only, I think, the womb and the ovaries really that would affect kind of hormonal changes in your body. I think that's they're really the driving force. I think the little fallopian tubes are just a little highway, like they're just yeah. a little road to get from A to B. So they're not, I don't think they produce hormones in and of themselves. So I haven't had any issues with that. There can be issues when it's a quite a severe, if it's not caught early enough, where if the ectopic pregnancy ruptures a lot more severely, you might lose the ovary as well, or you might, and that can have impact, and you might need hormone replacement therapy or whatever. Like, I think that yeah. can be an issue, but I was lucky in that it was caught early enough. To be honest, I hope it would be rare enough that it wouldn't be caught early enough now, because it's so severely painful. You can't really not go to the hospital, like you're on the floor in a ball, like it's that level of I can't stand up, like it's yeah. it's really, really painful.
So then you took it upon yourself to make some lifestyle changes when you decided to try again.
Yeah, well, I suppose I felt like, I mean, that doctor was very kind of, you'd be grand, you know, it's only a 10% chance. I remember them telling me that and holding on to that. And it's really funny because I was talking to my mum about it recently and she remembered that fact. I'd completely forgotten that fact, but there's only a 10% chance of having a recurring ectopic. So I was
saying, like a 10% chance if you've had one that you'll have.
If you've had one that you'll have another one. Yeah. And everyone in the family was telling me, my great grandmother, who lived until she was until I was in my 20s. So I knew quite well. She had her first pregnancy was ectopic and she went on to have 7 children. So everyone was like, no, this is fine. You know, this happens. It's going to be fine, you know. And that was back in the day, you know, a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
When and she, you know, she had the full open surgery, which would have been really, really yeah. risky and stuff. Yeah. So crazy stuff. So everyone was like, you'll be fine, you know, she had 7 kids, you'll be just like her, you'll be totally fine. So that was, I suppose, what I held on to as well, and the doctor being so positive. And I was like, no, and I, but at the same time, I felt like still had the regular periods, that hadn't gone away, and still, and now felt, well, I don't really know if it does serve both, and am yeah. I just working on half capacity here, or what's going to happen? So I stopped drinking, and I'm not a big drinker anyway, so it wasn't particularly a big hardship. But I stopped drinking and just sort of tried to look after myself a bit better, ate a bit better. I remember going out to parties and stuff and just not drinking, and it became normal after a while. I mean, you just, you know, it was fine. But it didn't, like, I don't know if it ever really had much of an impact, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, it just, I did it for myself and I suppose for my own, to feel kind of proactive. I suppose when you have something that you can't really control, you try and exert whatever little bits of control over the situation you can. So if you feel yeah. like you're making a positive contribution to the situation, I suppose. So, but it's still like, it took almost 3 years again to get pregnant again. And it was the same, like it was just eerily familiar, like the whole thing, like step by step, it was identical. Like it just went exactly the same way. Faint, very faint lines on the pregnancy test, but a positive. Went to work fine. It was a couple of weeks later, in work, stabbing pain. The spotting started, yeah. And then the stabbing pain. I remember I changed jobs and I was in a different office. And I just remember lying down behind my desk, and my desk was kind of had my back to a wall. And I just remember, like, my boss kind of sticking his head around going, are you okay? And I was like, no, could you phone my husband? He was like, Jesus Christ. And I had to, and of course, it's so early. You haven't told anyone you're even pregnant.
Yeah.
You don't even want to utter it, you know? I was like,
did you know then?
I did know I was pregnant again, but
did you know?
Oh, and
that
that's it. Yeah, yeah, I knew. Yeah. Once the spotting started, I was like, oh, here we go. Here we go. And straight into the coom again. And they were much quicker at diagnosing because they sort of had my file, I suppose, at that stage. And they tried to save. The difference this time was they tried to save the tube. So it was much more, a much longer time in hospital, which it can be kind of grueling, I suppose, when you're waiting and you're in pain all that time as well. So what there's a couple of things they can do if they catch it early enough, which is to try and flush out the tube, basically. So they use methotrexate, which I'm not actually sure exactly what type of drug it is. Somebody mentioned that they can use it in cancer as well, that it shrinks cells, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's used in abortion pills maybe as well. I'm not sure. It's that kind of
a
drug where the idea of it is anyway that it would shrink the pregnancy cells so that they can be reabsorbed by the body, that they try and... but you can still be left with a scarred fallopian tube, which could just cause more ectopics down the line, or, you know, could block the tube entirely. But I suppose it's like a proportional risk that they try and do that. So I was 9 days total in the hospital that time, but it just it just kept getting worse, and they had to operate eventually and take the second one out.
And so, how much were you kind of involved in, like, did you feel that you knew what was happening throughout when you were there and they were trying this and that and whatever? Did you feel that you were kind of involved, maybe not in the decision making process, obviously they need to save your life at the end of the day, but how much did you follow along with kind of the stuff that was happening, the treatments and the decisions and everything?
I think I probably just followed along. I always ask questions. I mean, I'd definitely be one to kind of ask questions. And you have so much time to think as well. Like, the doctors would do their rounds, and then you've got like the next 24 hours to kill until they come around again, you know. So there's a lot of time to kind of think. I think I was just really sad, really, at that point. And it was just like, I knew at that point, you can't move it into the womb. You can't save it. So it was just like, okay, you know. And even if they did save the tube, I do remember thinking, this is just going to happen again, or, you know, it's just prolonging it, really. And I was kind of 30 at that stage, and I was like, I felt like time was moving on, and I was kind of going, now we're heading into the point where they start calling you geriatric pregnancies and stuff, you know, where you're kind of gone from being the young 20-year-old, it's fine, I have loads of time. And even though 30 is still really young, but I just was starting to feel that actually now, you know, this is, you know, if they do save the tube, is this just going to mean I'm going to be here again in 2 years' time? You know, an even dodgier fallopian tube, and even, you know, still with the ropey periods, like, is this ever going to resolve if they do save this tube? So it was kind of, they are actually quite good. The medical staff are quite good about, you know, promoting IVF pretty much straight away. They were very kind of pro that. And kind of going, look, this is not the end of the road. They were very kind of, because I would just be very weepy. I'm a very like emotional person anyway. And of course, you're full of hormones, and you're, you know, when you're in pain and you're in hospital and you're feeling lonely and sad and all the rest of it. And I remember them going, no, like, come on, you're, you know, this is fine. This is, you know, we can get around this. And they were kind of saying, the fact that your body is holding on to the pregnancy so tightly and is fighting the drugs we're giving it, like, you're body is actually doing a really good job of trying to stay pregnant, so that bodes really well for you for IVF. So that was sort of, so they started nearly from the beginning, even before the actual surgery, I think they were like, this is going to be an option on the table. And so, what, because I was in hospital for 9 days and this was happening, I suppose the two ectopics was kind of, it's a rare enough, I suppose. Well, if there's only a 10% chance of it happening twice, it's fairly rare. And I think the chances are even lower again, I think, when it's the two tubes, because sometimes people have multiple ectopics in one tube, but this was both tubes. So they would send all of the student doctors down to me to interview me, and they just asked me so many invasive questions. And I remember, because at first I thought they were just doctors. You know, you don't really necessarily realize, and your head is so full of other things.
Yeah.
But I just remember I had quite a queue nearly of student doctors, and some of them literally didn't have a clue, and I was having to explain what an ectopic pregnancy was. Wow. Like, oh, it's a pregnancy that happens outside of the womb. And they were like, oh, and like scribbling notes. And I just remember, like, it was fine maybe the first time. I was like, oh, helping the medical profession, this is good. But I had a few different sets of student doctors, and it just felt quite invasive after a while. I think I was just a sitting duck because I was there for 9 days.
And were you asked, like, did you consent to that? Or how did that work?
They would come down and they would say, can we ask you a few questions, you know? And you're so bored. Sometimes you're like, oh, go on then. Because I have someone to talk to. But then it just became quite tedious. Because I think maybe some people tell them to get lost, you know? And I'd be too polite sometimes for my own good. But yeah, I just remember there was a roll of them just coming and asking the same questions over and over again. I was kind of like, oh, just go and talk to your friends. I can't do this anymore. And that was one of the things.
You kind of assume as well, like, probably not a lot of people would tell them to piss off, because it's them asking you, can I ask you a question? It's not somebody else then going, would you mind if we send in some, do you know what I mean? Like, that's almost a bit rude then to go, no, you can't actually.
I know, exactly. I know. And you're just sitting there. You're sort of trapped. Like, you can't go anywhere. Yeah, it's a funny one. I mean, on the one hand, you're like, you do want these doctors to have bedside manner and to be aware of things that they're, you know, to learn the things they need to learn. But yeah, I think I just felt after a while like a bit like a sideshow freak, because there was just a good few of them. There's a few sets of them, and it was just, oh, look at the girl, he's had two ectopics. Oh, I'll go and talk to her, you know? Yeah. Like, it just felt a bit weird. But in general, though, the doctors were very good and very upbeat with me and very kind of encouraging. And after it did end up in surgery and all of that entails, and that was just like, no, this is what we're going to do. We're going to get you on the road. We left the hospital with referrals. So we were like straight on the road to making that happen. And in a way, like me giving up alcohol and eating better and all of that, and trying to, you know, maintain the ideal weight and all of that stuff at that time, trying to exert a bit of kind of control over things. In a way, eventually when we did end up going for IVF, in a way it was a relief. It sort of felt empowering, like kind of going, right, now we can actually take control of this mad situation that is my body, like that is not playing by any rules, and we can make it behave itself in a way. Yeah. So
it did behave.
We were really lucky. I mean, and again, like, you can do IVF a million times and still not be lucky. But I think the doctors were quite confident, I think, because of the way my body reacted to the drugs and the pregnancies, were even though they were not in the right place and not functioning properly, it was still there and it was still growing every day despite them trying to not, you know, get rid of it, basically. So they were quite confident, and they were right that my body reacted really well. So yeah, we were really lucky.
Yeah. And you had twins.
With twins, yeah.
Yeah. So doubly lucky.
Yeah, we were doubly lucky, which was amazing because, yeah, I mean, we'd always joke, you know, two for the price of one, because it was so expensive at the
time.
Well,
I was going to say, because that's the other thing. It's like, this is an option. Well, it is if you have money, I suppose.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I always felt, even at the time, it was on the NHS in England. Like, if you were having trouble, you could get it through the health service for free in the UK. And I remember here going, that's just not an option. I don't think it's an option now, even.
No.
Which is 11 years later, nearly 12 years later, I suppose, from when we started, which is kind of shocking, really, because I do think there should be some kind of subsidies in place, because it's such a prohibitive expense. We were just really lucky. My grandmother helped us a bit, and we had to reduce mortgage payments. I mean, and that's a big ask, you know, like it's a rigmarole that you don't want to have to do. Like, you don't want to mess with your mortgage, because you never know when that's going to have repercussions down the line. But it was an expensive thing. It was about €10,000, I think, at the time. I don't think it's maybe as expensive now.
No, I don't think it's quite that. But it's still a lot. Yeah,
it was a lot. Now it's kind of done in dribs and drabs. And I was lucky at the time that I had a permanent job. I'm freelance now. It just wouldn't be an option. Like, just would not be on the table. Not a hope. Like, not a hope that we could do that now. You know, it's...
Did you enjoy the pregnancy when you did get pregnant with the twins?
I actually had a great pregnancy with the twins, health-wise, up until they came early. But health-wise, everything went really well. And I remember, like, having had the embryo transfer done and like afraid to move really for the first, you know, couple of weeks. I just remember spending a lot of time in bed. I took time off work, was really just precious with myself. I was afraid to move because it felt like if I moved, everything would go wrong. So, but I remember waking up one morning and I had a plant beside my bed and all of a sudden I couldn't stand the smell of it. Like, it was like, oh God, that plant had been there for weeks, like months probably. And all of a sudden I could just smell it really strongly. And we weren't allowed, they kind of don't, they tell you to do, everything is very regimented when you're doing IVF. It's like, you know, the injection has to go on 9:45 on this date. Like, it's literally down to the minute with some of the process. And it was like, I wasn't allowed to pee on a stick until this particular date, and that was a couple of days before that date. But I kind of felt then that I knew I was pregnant when the smell, you know, the smell thing, and you're like, oh God, with so many really, really sensitive. And I was like, I felt really hopeful at that stage. And then when I was allowed to pee on the stick, and it was like the double, really strong, really definitely pregnant lines. No more pale, is it, do you think, if we shine a torch on it, you know?
Yeah,
none of that. It was really definitely there. And of course, because you're in that system, they give you scans every 5 minutes. So we were able to go and get everything confirmed, and they could see that the two eggs were there, and it was all good, and it was going to be twins. And that was really, really exciting. So that was really good. But as I said, I was really precious with myself, and I was kind of terrified the whole time. For the first half, I would say, I just had it in the back of my head that something could go wrong at any minute. And of course, you're told all the way through, oh, twins is a high-risk pregnancy. I had scans every couple of weeks for the whole thing, which is amazing because I have all those little pictures of the whole, you know, it was great. So again, that gave me a real sense of control in a way, because so much of it is so out of your control. You know, it's nature doing its thing, and it's so, you don't know what's going to happen or what's you know, going to go right and what's going to go wrong, you know. And so that was really reassuring. But I remember people trying to give me presents and stuff, and I was just like, stay away from me. I can't look at baby grows. I can't look at bassinets, people sending me recommendations for boogies, and I was like, I can't. I don't want to buy anything. I don't want to look at anything. I don't want to know about anything. And consequently, they came early, and we didn't even have cots built or anything ready for them. Really, like, I'd sort of started buying stuff and hadn't got hadn't painted where I wanted to paint. You know, the day I went into labor, I was painting the stairs. Like, you know, it was just because I'd still had 5 weeks in my head. You know, but yeah, we weren't quite ready, but we were, you know, sure, you just have to get on with it anyway. You're never ready.
Nobody's ever ready,
Nobody's ever ready. I like to prepare, so, you know, that control thing, I suppose. It's like, I like to know what's happening. But yeah, definitely didn't fully relax into it for a long time. Like, every scan was reassuring. You know, it was reassuring as time went by. And then I suppose when we reached the halfway mark, I started to go, oh, okay. And then you get to that 20 magic kind of 26 week mark, and you're like, okay, they'd be viable now. Like, they might have problems, but they'd be viable. And you know, you kind of, as every week passes after that, it's just a bonus, really. You're just like, okay, we're getting there.
Yeah.
So that was good. I didn't wish it away. I did enjoy it on one level, because I didn't have any morning sickness. I was fine, a few woozy, fainty kind of moments, but nothing negative really. I felt it was like the pregnancy I deserved after going through the pain of all the other things. So it was really nice. I was I felt comfortable in my skin with it, and was really happy, obviously thrilled, like so excited and terrified and all the rest that comes with any pregnancy, I suppose. But yeah.
In terms of the ectopic pregnancy thing, do you know, like, is there a reason why it happens to a person? Is there a reason why it happens twice to one person? Like, did you ever talk to anyone about that, or did you wonder?
I have wondered. I haven't really spoken to anyone about it. I don't know, because for me it seems inexplicable in a way, because they did actually inspect my other fallopian tube and could see nothing wrong with it. So that's always kind of baffled me, that they actually, while they were in it, they're like, while we were in there, we had a good look at your right-hand side fallopian tube. Looks perfect. This is going to be, you're going to be fine. So I don't know. I don't know whether it's some bodies maybe have a surge of hormones, grab onto it, and it just triggers a little bit early maybe, and it gets stuck in that place. I know sometimes there can be scars on it, for whatever reason. You're just born with them maybe, I don't know, or they're just slightly formed differently, or I don't know. I do know people who've had a couple of ectopics, but in the same tube, if you know what I mean, and have gone on to have babies. So they may have one dodgy tube and then one fine one, and have eventually gotten the dodgy one removed, but would have, a pregnancy and then an ectopic and then a pregnancy or two and then another ectopic and then get that dodgy one removed. You know, like I have seen people like that. But no, I don't really know very many people personally that have had them. So it's a weird one when you say to people a lot of people still go, what's that again? You know, they don't really know what it is.
And in terms of having had both your tubes removed, that hasn't impacted massively on your life after having the girls?
No, no. And in fact, I don't know whether pregnancy cured me or what, but whether it was the combination of having, because part of the IVF is they have to regulate your periods. So that was the first job for me, was getting my cycle regulated. And actually it took longer than they thought because they're like, they had it all scheduled out and they're like, oh, actually your body's totally not reacting the way we thought it would. So I was supposed to do it all by like that June or July. And then it ended up being August. So I remember, because I hadn't ovulated on the day they said I would and stuff like that, it was like, oh, your body's not doing what we wanted to do. So they had to adjust things and make it work better. But but after that, and after having the girls, like once my periods came back after having the girls, they've been like clockwork ever since. So I don't know. You often hear that sometimes people have a pregnancy and their body changes, like their periods go all over the place and they never get them back normally. And then sometimes for me, it's like the complete opposite, where it's just gone completely the other way. It's actually, been really normalized. So I don't know. I assume I still have polycystic ovaries. But they don't bother me, I suppose. I remember asking at the time about the polycystic ovaries, should I get, you know, the cysts removed? And they were like, the doctor was kind of like, no, they'll just come back again. Like, you just have this. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. So there's no cure for that as such. It's just, it is. But at the moment, anyway, we'll see as menopause starts coming, I suppose, and all of those things. But at the moment, it's all fine. But yeah, and the other positive thing about no fallopian tubes is not having to worry about contraception, which
is
a very, very useful thing. So I don't need to take pills or worry about stuff like that. So that's
good. Another element of control.
Yeah. Control freak. Gosh. Yes. Yeah. Yes, all about the control. Oh my gosh, yeah.
That was Sive Devlin on Bits of Me. You can get all her news at sivedevlin.ie, as well as on social media, all of which I'll link in the show notes. You can also follow Bits of Me on Instagram and Twitter, listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all other major platforms, and support the project from €2 a month at patreon.com/bitsofme. Today I want to especially thank Paula Denon and Zara Maguire for helping to keep the conversation going. Thanks for listening, stay tuned, and another woman will share her story next week.